Thank you. My name is Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. And when they asked me about doing this workshop, I said, oh, sure. And usually when they ask you to do a workshop, they have a specific meaning. That means there'll be a little room somewhere, you know, with two mics, one for you and one for people who want to ask questions. And, you know, you do 20, 30 minutes, and then people ask dumb questions, and you give them dumb answers. That's what my sponsor told me when I knew. He said, there are no dumb questions. We got some pretty stupid answers. But anyway, I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be talking about the traditions. I'm glad that there's a number of you that gave a damn, and I'm very grateful for you guys that sat down in the right seat here right in front of me. No offense. I've been sober since the 30th of January, 1970. I did every service job known to man, including I was a delegate to the conference and panel 26, which was just before the Ice Age. And so the traditions have been inoculated into me from the time I got here, and I love them. I want to warn you, however, I'm going to talk about the traditions. I'm not going to talk on the traditions. I went to one time where this guy read the whole thing, and when he got, he said, tradition five. We all went, oh, no. We'd been there an hour and a half by then, you know what I mean? So I'm not going to go through the traditions. That'll make you a little happier. I just want to talk about the traditions. A little story in preface to that. When I was very new in AA, there was a meeting up in Laguna Beach, which is about 45 minutes north of where I live in Oceanside, California. And my little sponsor was loved that meeting up there, and it was just all the original members of AA guys. It was a men's stag meeting. You know, Chuck C. and old Ralph and Joe Quinn. And these original guys, all of them had 30-some years. And I don't know, you probably don't have anybody like this here, but I was a whiner when I was new. And I know that doesn't happen in Nashville, but I would, like an idiot, I'd go to that meeting, and and they just would tear me to shreds. They just loved. And they would really hurt my feelings. So on the way back from the meeting one night, they had been particularly cruel to me that night, and I told my sponsor, Bill, about how they didn't realize that I was sensitive. I said it about five times, which was a big mistake. I should have noticed the muscle jumping in his chair, you know. And usually he yelled at me. Bill was a big yeller, but that night he spoke very quietly. He said, Cliff, let's get this straight. You are not sensitive. You are an immature son of a bitch. That's what you are. And I told him I kind of preferred sensitive. But he wouldn't have none of it. So I went home that night, went to bed, but I did not sleep. And I lay there all night, tossed and turned. Finally, about 5 in the morning, I got up, made some coffee, and went out and sat on the back steps and watched the sunrise. And about the time the sun was coming up, I realized my sponsor was correct. I have never been sensitive. I have always just been immature. And if you're new here tonight, I want to tell you the steps work a lot better when you're immature. Because when you're sensitive, you don't need them. No. Just the other day, I was in the Reflections book on the 27th of June. Many of you saw it. This is from AA Comes of Age. Says, we obey AA steps and traditions because we really want them for ourselves. It's no longer a question of good or evil. We conform because we genuinely want to conform. Such is our process of growth and unity and function. Such is the evidence of God's grace and love among us. And then the guy who wrote it later, you know, off that said, It's fun to watch myself grow in AA. I fought conformity to AA's principles from the moment I entered. But I learned from the pain of my belligerence. I love that term. I learned from the pain of my belligerence that in choosing to live the AA way of life, I opened myself to God's grace and love. Then I began to know the full meaning of being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. The great Jewish theologian Martin Buber wrote one time, there's only two emotions in the world. There's only two. There's love and there's fear. That's all. And then he wrote, and they are mutually unable to get along with one another. They cannot live together. You can live in love or you can live in fear. And so a lot of people think that traditions are laws, and they're anything but laws. One of the classes I taught was semantics, the science of language, and of course it's directive language. You know, and the sign says, keep off the grass. There's an implied promise there that if you don't keep off the grass, you know, there's a punishment coming. And so we obey laws because we're afraid. We obey traditions because we love each other and we love Alcoholics Anonymous and we want to keep it here. And so I think Martin Buber was right. From Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, it says, we of AA are apt to sometimes brag on the virtues of our fellowship. Let's remember that none of them are earned virtues. We have been forced on them to begin with by the cruel lash of John Barleycorn. We have adopted these attitudes, these practices, this structure, not at first because we wish to, but because we had to. Do that or die, one of the two. I'm only second generation Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people have come in the last few years. I think they probably got the impression that AA goes back to the dark ages sometime. AA is only 71 years old. You know, we have not got it knocked. I've been sober longer than half the time there's been an Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know if that scares you, but it scares the hell out of me. I've only been sober 36 years, and I've been sober longer than half the time there's been an Alcoholics Anonymous. 71 years, we went from two wretched alcoholics to now over 2 million in only 71 years. The growth has been tremendous, and it's great. But without these traditions, it ain't going to last. Of course, most of you are probably sick of the damn story about the, what's that group that came and went? The Washingtonians. If I'm about them here once more, I'll puke. But anyway, they're a good example. Was I looking out at Lee's tape stuff out there, and they have that big mock-up of the Saturday Evening Post article that had the Jack Alexander article. And as most of you know, that Jack Alexander article catapulted AA from, 2,000 members to probably 30,000 in a very short period of time. I know on the West Coast they were just inundated with, you know, so that. And what I realized a few years ago was when I was 13 years old, I had a route of sold door-to-door magazines and then delivered them. And I delivered that magazine. General Service Office never written me to thank me about that. I'm part of the fabric of Alcoholics Anonymous, for God's sakes. I'm only second generation Alcoholics Anonymous. When I, in 1975, they had the first old timers meeting there in Los Angeles, and a bunch of us went up. And everybody on the program had 30 years in 1975. So everybody had come in the 30s, that was one of the great moments of my life to hear those people talk. Before, there were traditions, you know, but the kind of goofy stuff they did before there were traditions. They were talking about they used to give people paraldehyde, all kinds of drugs. They had a new guy. They just drug him up for the first couple weeks. And the civil was talking about, you know, so 1 week they came in and said, come get your drugs here, you know, passing them out. So they were going to do 12-step calls. The next week they said, turn in all your drugs. No more drugs. They'd gotten a letter from New York to cut that out. You know. So, too bad we came in too late, didn't we? But I'll never forget the honor that those people gave to the traditions and how much they talked about how the traditions saved the day in those early days. Bill wrote the traditions in 46, and he couldn't get anybody to okay him at all till 50, and it wasn't until 55 that they were adopted. And most of the alcoholics in the early days didn't like the traditions at all. They thought they were rules. And you know how we like rules. And so they fought them bitterly. There's a letter in the archives there in Los Angeles. The guy had written to Bill. He was coming out, to share. And they all said, Bill, we just loved having you out here. We want to hear your story, especially about that hot flash experience. But for God's sakes, don't talk about those stupid traditions. They didn't want to hear. And so it's a good thing they didn't have their way. We might not be here today. A few years ago, I got to talk in Akron, and the guy that was our host took us to the archives there in Akron. I'm sure most of you living this close have probably been to them. And it was very, very inspiring to me. And he took us out to the place where Bill and Bob met in the Sieberling Estate, and we went to the gravesite and things like that. And I had this tremendous feeling of bonding with Bill and with Bob and all those early guys. And I think that's kind of what we do here, isn't it? A guy in the wrote in the, I think it's August the 20th in the Daily Reflections about how we bond, bond with those people long ago that have been dead for years, and with each other, of course. I'm here in Nashville, and I just fit here as well as any place I've ever been in my life. And we bond with babies yet unborn. I work hard on the traditions myself in AA because I've seen it help my children, and I'm watching a couple of my grandchildren right now, do you know what I mean? And maybe their children. And I want AA to be here, and without the traditions, AA cannot stay here. But they're not laws, they're traditions. I get a kick out of some people who want to take their traditions, beat other people over the head with them, We obey the traditions because we love each other and we love AA, and we know it's best for all of us. Now, not when we're new, we're not always that way, but, you could have a sponsor like I had. And when you talk about the traditions, you're not talking, sponsorship doesn't fall under the traditions. Sponsorship's kind of a thing all by itself, isn't it? I love that. Because sponsorship, see, like if Bob down here wants me to sponsor him and he asks me, I'd like you to be my sponsor, I'll say, well, okay. We'll sit down, we'll have coffee, and I'll tell him what I expect. He tells him what he's looking for. And from then on, I'm his sponsor until he says I'm not. And finally, if he gets to a point where he doesn't like what I'm saying, he'll come up and say, Cliff, you're fired. Oh! The sponsee is in absolute control of the situation. So when you talk about Nazi sponsors, I get the biggest kick out of that. The only people who are sponsored by Nazis are Nazis. You know what I mean? Now, my sponsor was a cruel, vicious, rotten little man. Meanest. I'll talk more about that tomorrow night. Oh, he was pitiful. But he was just exactly what I need because I was a pompous ass, And I never fired him, no matter how cruel he was to me, because I knew he was right. But anyway, there's the steps and the traditions. And the steps work because at some level we're all the same. At some deep spiritual level, I think, everybody in this room is the same. A few years ago, I led a meeting there. We took a meeting over to another meeting. Do you ever do that here? You take a meeting over to the other meeting. There were like 15, 20 people, and I was leading the meeting. And I would call on a person. They would come up and share for a couple minutes. And I had gotten to watch all of them come in that were sharing. And it just struck me. Everybody was so different as they'd come up and share. And the funny thing was, the people that were real shy and retiring and scared and only talk to your shoes when they came in, they were up looking people in the eye, talking, blah, 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 blah. You know, what happened to them? And then the big blowhards that came in that knew everything, they had quieted down. And when I was listening to the people at the AA meeting, I got to thinking about when I'd gone in the service a couple of millenniums ago. I went through boot camp and there were some fat guys and some skinny guys. And when we got to the end of boot camp, the fat guys were skinnier and the skinny guys were fatter. You figure. The food was awful. But obviously it was good for us. See what I mean? And so I think that's what it is with the steps. At that level where we're all the same, that's where it works. Now, the traditions are something else again. The traditions are because we're none of us the same. And most of us are lunatics. Especially when we come in here. Nobody's the same. We're all separate, unique individuals, and we have to learn how to get along with each other. Every tradition that we have, if you're new here, was written because our forefathers screwed things up. I went in New York one time. I went in the archives, and I'm reading the archives. And I think it was the Cleveland Plain Dealer, one of those, and it says, this is in the 30s, it says, a visitor is visiting here. The founder of AA is visiting Cleveland, Bill W. Then there was a half a page picture of him. There's an anonymous person. And, of course, they all did. They blew anonymity. All of you have heard of the singer. Everybody, I forget everything I'm going to say up here. This gal was a big-time singer and movie actress, and she wrote a book, I'll Cry Tomorrow, Lillian Roth, and then, you know, and then it lasted all over the place. Then she got drunk and died drunk and publicly, too. Probably took 5,000 people with her, too. They had a lot of problems in the early days with people with the money. What do we do with the money? Never ask an alcoholic, what are we going to do with the money? So, the tradition, you know, and I don't know about you, but that just tickles the hell out of me. The fact that our forefathers, Bill and Bob and all the rest of them, weren't up on Mount Olympus in white robes. They were just goofy drunks like us. And they found a way to get along. They found a way to coexist. They found a way to keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. We can make new ones today. Okay. It seems to me there are two basic and by the way, these are my opinions, and my opinions are worth just what yours are. Nothing. Okay. Well, in my home group, when the speaker, just before the speaker comes up, it says, any opinions expressed by the speaker are those of the speaker, which hurts some people's feelings. There's two basic underlying principles, if you would. This is not just me. There's a lot of other people feel this way, too, that underline all of the traditions. And these two underlying principles apply to some, and the other principle applies to some, and some of them apply to all of them. And the first basic underlying principle of all the traditions is it's one drunk talking to another. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. There are probably close to 3 million sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous today in the world, which if you took all the other treatment for alcoholism, lumped them all together, they wouldn't make a pimple on the foot of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have been so far the greatest solution to the problem of alcoholism the world has ever known. Yeah. And it's because it's one drunk talking to another drunk in the front seat of a car on the way to a meeting. Angie was magnificent last night. I loved her talk. Of course, I used to be a speech teacher. I could probably help bring her out. You know, she... kind of let her go a little. But the to me, the most, I'm going to cry. She got me crying last night. She'll get me crying now. The most moving part of her talk, when here she is, this big black gal going down the street, filthy, dirty, drunk out of her mind, in the black section of Cincinnati. This little white lady, she told you, just a little bitty guy, walks right up to her in the street, says, "You don't have to live this way. Would you do it?" I don't know if I would. That little lady has walked right up to her and said, "You don't have to live like this." And took her to a meeting. See, I bet a person went through your mind, huh? I was talking there. Everybody in this room is sober. It's because somebody took the time, you know, to put you in the front seat of a car and take you to a meeting and to haul you around. Whether you went through a treatment center, whatever it happens to be, there's still a angel, there's still a AA that saved you. Mine was a little electrician that lived in Oceanside. He lived down around the corner from me, and I'd been in and out and in and out and in and out of AA. And he always timed a Saturday morning, come by with his little truck. He always looked so healthy, ruddy-faced. And I just got through puking, you know, for 3 or 4 hours and put my bathrobe on, go out to get the paper. And at that exact moment, he would whip up. "How you doing, Cliff?" Did you ever try to carry that off? "Oh, I'm doing pretty well, Bill. Yes." But he planted seed, and then when the time came, he was there, and he took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. So, and the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is, everybody wins. I worked for 26 years in central office and, you know, answering the phones. I just retired. I thought it was time to rotate. But, I, you know, and you answer the phone and there's some poor devil on the other end. "Oh, my God, I got to do something about drinking." I'll think about, you know, Bob, who's been kind of in the bag lately. Is this all there is? You know what I mean? So I call Bob. "I got me a 12-step. Okay. And that night I see Bob, who's been morose lately. I see Bob at the meeting with the new guy. Tap his equipment. And then a year later, I get to see Bob give the new guy the cake for a year. And the three of us all benefit. And if I go on a 12-step call and I haul the guy around a few meetings and he tells me he wasn't really an alcoholic, you know what I mean? And that he found a better way at church. That's okay. Good for you. He saved my life for whatever period of time, got me out of me for a while. What a way to go, huh? Nobody can lose. The dirtiest, filthiest 12-step calls I've ever been on saved my life. I went on a 12-step call to a drunk Marine because his daughter asked me to. By the way, what's this against cold 12-step calls? They're the best kind. For me, to save me. And this guy's lying on the couch, his liver sticking out to here. And he's on his bathrobe at 4:30 in the afternoon. Sure sign, huh? And he dismissed me. I just went because his daughter asked me to. And he said, "Well, I'm in the Marine Corps. I don't need a crutch. And you guys are on a, you know, you have AA's a crutch." I said, "Right on, baby. I'm going to get out of here." Anyway, I talked to him. And a month later, he was dead. And I went to his funeral. My little 10-year-old son was sitting leaning against me. And as the funeral went on in this mortuary, his little 10-year-old son came and looked in the casket at his daddy. And my little 10-year-old son was leaning against me here. That kept me sober for 10 years. Yeah. That little boy that looked in the casket, JJ, I sponsor him now. He grew up. So one drunk talking to another. Tradition one, I am but the small part of a great whole. But that's my essential part, is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And it's also that I be the whatever part of my home group that's needed. Absolutely important. So one drunk talking to another, tradition one. Tradition two, include all who wish to join. We don't keep anybody out. We bring anybody to the meeting, even if he smoked dope. We're not responsible to any authority. There are no authorities. Our leaders are but twisted servants. And tradition five of all of them, huh? We have but one primary purpose. You know, sometimes I have a big home group. There's 3,300 of us. I find that I'm standing around talking with the other old timers and visiting and not noticing the new guy hanging around the edges. I catch myself with that every once in a while. And the only reason my home group is there is to carry the message to the man who still suffers. Never mind money, property, or authority. That has nothing to do with 12-step call. It has nothing to do with it. We just go get them no matter what. We're self-supporting. Okay. Non-professional. Professionalism would absolutely destroy Alcoholics Anonymous. Absolutely. If I don't go for fun and for free to save my own life, what the hell, you know, why would I do it? As little authority as possible in Tradition 9. And no controversy, Tradition 10. By that means that anything that would stand in the way of me 12-stepping you and you getting sober. When I was really new, I was to the left of Mao Zedong, my politics, okay? I made communists look corrupt. And all my buddies that came in at the same time, they were all redneck, right-wing, you know, and we didn't get along. There were five of us in the car, and we were at each other all the time. Finally, my sponsor stopped the car one day. Obvious! Shut up! There'll be no politics in this car! We will not mention politics ever again! Then, every weekend we'd drive to L.A., see, and we'd all be in the car, and we drove through San Clemente, where President Nixon lived. And we'd get by just where the big sign said, home of President Nixon. They'd all look at each other and go. I'd go off. I'd start cussing. Bill said, shut up, Cliff. What's the matter with you? No controversy. That includes religion, too. That includes religion, too. Whatever your religion is okay with me. And, of course, we don't advertise anything. And, of course, we stay anonymous. So that first underlying principle of one drunk talking to another really, really is important. And there's so many of the traditions are applied to that. And the second underlying principle to all the traditions is I'm not God. We are not God. A guy wrote a great book about the history of AA. It's not conference approved, but it's still the best book about the history of AA I've ever read. A guy named Kurtz. He wrote it as a doctoral thesis and then developed it into a book later. He wasn't in AA when he wrote it. He is now. But it's a tremendous book on the history of AA. And that's what he named the book, Not God. He said because Bill and Bob seemed to really have that down. They really understood what that meant, that of all the people in the history of the world that proved we're not godlike, it's us. So when we have something that we want or we think's best or that's our opinion, we always have to remember that. That in the majority in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't mean all that much. When I was at the conference, now I taught parliamentary law at the college level. Don't tell me about parliamentary procedure. And one of the laws of parliamentary procedure is if I got 2/3 of the vote, you're through. If I get 2/3 of the vote, that's all there is, baby, you know. And I'm getting there, and they had something on the floor there. And there were like three guys still opposed to it. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, let's squish these guys. Come on, come on. You know what they did? They put it off until the next year. You have to have substantial unanimity, is what it's called at the conference level. That means damn near everybody, okay? But haven't you noticed in a group or at the intergroup level or at the area assembly level, they get one more vote than half. Shut up! We won. That's not AA. That's not what the traditions say. The traditions protect the minority like crazy. Because we have proven over and over, if you want to read the history of AA, the minority has been right so many of the times. The year that they, when the first year I was delegate in 78 or whatever it was, the gay groups had applied to have groups as gay groups put in the World Directory as gay groups. And I'll bet you 85 out of the 91 delegates that arrived there were opposed to it. But after we heard all the discussion and after everything had come out in the open, it carried unanimously. And as the years have proven, it's turned out to be really, really a good thing. Now, in those days, I wasn't as wide open as I am today. I was opposed to it, and I was pissed off about it, too. And I went back to Oceanside. I got my buddy Al McGee, and we started an impotent men's group. Only two morons that would admit it, you know what I mean? And we each put up $10 and we sent $20 off to General Service Office. Bob Pearson called me and said, "What the hell are you doing now?" And I said, "No, by God, if we're going to go by sexual preference, that's the way we're going to do it." There was a gal, Phyllis, and we were trying to get her to start a frigid women's group. Nobody would have believed her, I'll tell you for sure. So that's the kind of wide open person I was. You know. But so many times, if you look back on the history of AA, the minority has been right. And so for us to set ourselves up as God, because we have one more than half, a simple majority, is pretty ridiculous. We have to take our time and have substantial unanimity to where everybody's... There are, what do they say? There are no emergencies in AA. There are no emergencies in AA. There's AAs with emergencies, but there are no emergencies in AA. And on the not God one, I'm but the small part of a great whole. So, I mean, if I make too much waves, I can screw the whole thing up. Number two, there's only one authority, and that's God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. And by the way, your home group is a group conscience, and you make your decisions there. Your inner group, when they meet, is a group conscience too, a separate group conscience. Now, you might make a decision at your group level that a certain way you want it, but when you let your inner group rep go up there, he may not vote that way when he hears all the evidence. Same way as your delegate might not either. And at the area assembly, that's a group conscience. And so everywhere. And, of course, the warranties say we should arrive at everything by discussion and democratic vote. That's how we should decide everything. I'll tell you how we're deciding things at AA today. My inner group, I was the first chairman of our North County inner group, and we had 90 groups at the time. And our inner group reps, there used to be like 65 inner group reps out of the 90 meeting. And it dropped off to like 55 after a year. I wrote this scurrilous letter, "You dirty commie pickles," and went back up to 65. In North County, now there are 650 groups meeting. The average attendance at intergroup meeting is 34. We'll arrive at everything by democratic vote and discussion. There you go. Tradition three says we can't keep anyone out even if we don't think they're right. Or even if they're something else. Oh, by the way, I was hoping that when he started this meeting, I think I asked, but they ignored me. I wanted the long form of the traditions read. Because people argue about the traditions when they don't even read the long form. Especially tradition four, you know. Especially about, you know, the only requirement for, you know, is a desire to stop drinking. If you read that tradition, it says all over the place, we don't want to keep anybody out. Anybody, we want everybody who thinks they need alcoholics to be in, you know, we want to be inclusive. We want to be, you know, I know it reminds me of that old thing where they said, they called me a rebel and a thing to flout. They drew a circle and shut me out. But love and I, we knew the way to win. We drew a circle and shut them in. And so when you read the tradition, it's all over the place. It's trying to say, you know, not to keep anybody out. I have three kids sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And every one of them didn't get here just drinking. They've done it all, you know, stuff I had never even heard of. My one son that's the agriculturist, he has some mushrooms. Woo! But they all had a desire to stop drinking. They were all drinkers. And so if you're new here today, it sounds like I'm saying I'm in favor of letting all the drug addicts and everybody in. No, get me wrong. How many joint outfits have you joined where there's only one requirement? God, anything I've ever joined has had 37 requirements or 155 requirements. We only have one. Must be an important one, huh? The only requirement for members is a desire to stop drinking. Okay? So the fact that you do other stuff or we're in love with a sheep in Montana, it's not my business. You know what I mean? We can't keep anyone out, let's say. We can't be exclusive. Four, it says a group is a spiritual entity. Never mind what I think, never mind what I want. If I belong to the group and it has a group conscience, that's the spiritual entity there. And I'm only part of it. We need the least possible organization, so then we don't have any godlike figures. Haven't you known some terrible meetings in your day where there's two guys in the meeting that have 147 years, and everybody else is a newcomer or a slipper. And they've been the secretary of the meeting for eons. One of the biggest problems in AA today is lack of rotation. And it seems like it's because a lot of the newer people aren't willing to do anything. You can't blow your own horn here. You know, nobody's that important. And, of course, 11 and 12, anonymity. Absolutely ungodlike. We don't show ourselves up. So those two basic underlying traditions really underline almost all of the traditions. I think we get in a lot of trouble. Because it seems like to me, everybody in AA is either a Bill or a Bob. Have you ever noticed that? You know, our founders, Bill and Bob. Were there ever two people that were more unlike? You know, Bob never left Akron. That'll explain him right there. Yeah. And he, you know, what's his contribution? If it works, don't fix it. Okay. Bill, on the other hand, the guy was a dynamo, just going all the time, just running around and starting writing books and pamphlets. How many books did he write and pamphlets and charging around trying to build hospitals and everything else? He's just a frantic, crazy man. And his quote was, "The good is often the enemy of the best." So somewhere in between, if it works, don't fix it. And the good is often the enemy of the best. We ought to be in there somewhere. But it seems to me like everybody in AA is a Bill or a Bob. And I don't know about you, but Bobs irritate the hell out of me. Did you ever go to a meeting of all Bobs? The only thing worse is a meeting of all Bills. Hey! Shut up! But the secret here is there's never any inkling of anywhere, anything I've ever read or heard or anything anywhere, where there was a cross word between Bill and Bob. Bill and Bob adored each other. And they gave each other all the slack in the world. See, I think they knew that we need both. We need both. Bill wrote it once. In 1948, he wrote this thing that was in the language of the heart. It said, "We have, for example, the kind of AA who's for simplicity. Terrified of anything organized, he tells us that AA is getting too complicated. He thinks money only makes trouble, committees only make dissension, elections only make politics. Paid workers only make professionals, and clubs only coddle slippers. Says he, let's get back to coffee and cake by the cozy fireside. If any alcoholics stray our way, let's look after them, but that's enough. Simplicity is the answer. On the other hand, quite opposed to this halcyon simplicity is the AA promoter. Left to himself, he would bang the cannon and twang the lyre at every crossroad of the world. Millions for drunks, great AA hospitals, batteries of paid organizers, publicity experts wielding all the latest paraphernalia of sound and script. Such would our promoter dream. Yes, sir, he would bark. My two-year plan calls for 1 million AAs by 1950. Somewhere in between where we have to fall. There are some problems in AA today, and most of you are more aware of them even than I am. People whine about hospitals and treatment centers and that kind of thing, and that's okay. One person says, I know working in central office all these years, when we first opened central office, we used to get like 4 and 5 12-step calls a day. The last, I'd say, 5, 6, 10 years even, if we got one during the day, it would be a halcyon day. You know what I mean? And a lot of people saying, well, that's the treatment centers and the hospitals and that kind of thing. My personal opinion is that most people who wanted to get sober today, you know, they just get to that point where they know they've had enough. They know somebody in AA, an acquaintance, somebody they work with, or a friend that they saw the light come on in their eyes, and so they call. And they call, and then their friend comes and gets it, and that's really a good way to do it. Not that people don't get sober out of treatment centers and all that kind of thing, too. Clancy says the reason we have so much trouble with drug addicts in AA is there was a treatment center that only had one van. Kind of there, too. I'm very careful with people who want to talk about drug addiction in AA meetings. I do not jump on people, and this is my way I do things. I do not jump on somebody in the meeting. I just shut up. And when the meeting's over, I go up to them and I put my arm around them. They can't hit you with either hand that way. You know what I mean? And I tell them, do you know everything about AA? Let me tell you about what we do here, why we have this, you know. And I swear, 80 times out of 100, the person will say, I get it, okay. And once in a while, they'll tell you go to hell. That's the way we do it, you know. But there's the old things of John Bardacore, and the people who are this way in AA ultimately come back whipped. I don't have to straighten anybody out in AA unless I sponsor them. One of the things I've noticed about halfway houses, in the years that I've been working with, 12-stepping and sponsoring newcomers, I only had like about 7 guys all through the years that just simply could not get sober. And every one of those guys had in common a mother that took care of them. And one guy was in his 60s, his mother was 85, and she was still saying, well, the next time he does it, I'm not going to take him back. She did again, you know. And he died before she did. And maybe it's possible that some of these places where you can just go get dried out and get your ribs not showing again and feeling good again, maybe that's like the mother that's not there anymore. I don't know. I run across that a lot in guys that I work with. Maybe you don't have that experience. As I say, it's only my experience. I'm going to wind this up, for which you're very grateful, I'm sure. The most moving thing I've ever read, piece of literature I've ever read in AA, not the big book, not the 12 and 12, it's in an AA Comes of Age, where Bill Wilson, the founder of this program, the guy who built it, who discovered, found Bob and spent his whole life just nursing it along, without whom we'd be dead today, I'm sure. I know I would be. Bill Wilson, he came up with this idea of the conference. And then at the very first conference in 1955, when we were taking control of this thing for ourselves, He was up in the balcony looking down. And he said, A.A., may she always be safe, even from me. Hope we all feel that way. May A.A. always be safe, even from us. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Cliff. I'd like to certainly thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and kicking us off this afternoon. If you haven't already, just to point out real quick, pick up a schedule to sequence the next chain of events. And if you would care to, please join me in closing this meeting. Please stand, and then we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Prayer. Our Father,